Can sound save humanity? We're all on board with making life sound better round here, but what are the deepest possibilities of sound, of music making? Coming to Imma in Kilmainham next week is Sounds for New Seeds, a performance by the Norwegian visual artist and musicker Camille Normant, along with a glass harmonica, Hardinger fiddle, electric guitar, choir, and the Crash Ensemble. Sounds for New Seeds might question everything you know about sound and music, starting with any notion that the ear is at the centre of things, as Camille Normant explained to Culturefile.
Sound, for me, it's much more advantageous to really consider the body as a sound organ, in a way, as a receptacle. And if you would imagine times preceding the lives that we have now, where even feeling the vibration, the movement of the earth, for example, would be as equally as important as hearing a sound in the forest, the rustling of the leaves or something, to alert one to the approach of perhaps some danger. I'm not so interested in really nitpicking over the exact definition of sound, but it also points back to the classic question: if a tree falls in the forest and no one is around to hear it, does it actually make a sound? Well, you know, this is, you know, really pointing to exactly what we are thinking about, and it does create a vibration. And there are many other living beings who would actually hear it in the sense of an orally, but also with their bodies as well. So I think it's helpful, especially today, to put ourselves within a more spectrum of the body as opposed to isolated sensory organs. Our recent configuration has actually created a sense of loss, from my perspective, musically, in terms of who has the agency of music or feels that they have the power and the right to be a musicking being. I mean, we are inherently musicking beings to the point that music actually predated language. And I think that's an astounding realization. Scientists at one point believed that, of course, you know, language preceded music because, you know, we needed language to increase our chances of survival, and music was simply an artifact of our ability to make language, to communicate in that way. And Darwin believed the opposite, and years later he was actually, I don't want to say proven, but thought to be correct by contemporary scientists, believing that it was actually our inheritance of music, the fact that we are inherently musicking beings, that preceded language and perhaps helped to even shape our cognitive abilities and our brain itself to be able to be language beings as well. What we have inherited since very strictly composed music is a loss of people who fall outside that ability to create and to participate in music through those terms. It used to be that anyone would pick up an instrument or make a sound with their voice or with their body, their hands, and be able to participate. You know, music lies so deeply within our bodies that I really do honestly believe that everyone is capable of making music in some form. I think that we have been given unfair expectations of what those forms should be and unfair limits of what those forms should be. I also work quite often with non-professional singers. I work with professional singers as well, but with many of the professional singers, there's a different type of introduction process, and that introduction process is often about unlearning certain things, learning that all sonic material is valid. So if you need to breathe, let's hear it. If your lips are smacking, let's hear that too. If your voice starts to wave, don't stop. It's all part of the voice belonging to a body. And that's really, really what I want. I don't want a voice that is detached, so detached from the body that it becomes artificial. That's something else. And it's quite fascinating, the degrees of artificiality that we hear constantly today on the airwaves. I'm quite interested in what would normally be deleted from the recording tracks, hearing the breath enter and exit someone's mouth, you know, the signs that there are teeth and tongues belonging to this mouth as well, because again, this the sound belongs to a body, and these bodies all have experiences in the world, and so it's very important for me to keep those connections together. As I was approaching this composition, I was thinking a lot about the notion of the cycle, of course, taking from feedback loops, which I'm somewhat obsessed with. But so there's the sonic feedback loop, but there's also thinking about the historical feedback loop and repetition. You know, what does that mean for us as individuals, but certainly for us as societies, and looking around us now, just wondering, how is it that we are in the political situations that we are today in the world? You know, how have we not still managed to learn any kinds of lessons for these? Why are we recreating so many of the same mistakes and talking about it, realizing it, and yet not being able to prevent these cycles? So sounds from New Seeds came out of this kind of thinking about these loops, the sonic feedback loop, as I mentioned, these kind of destructive pattern loops, but also, more importantly, the loops of possibility, the evolutionary loops. In anthropology and biology, there is a term called evolutionary feedback, which simply points to the process of a biological being interacting with changes in its environment and adapting to it on the genetic level, of course, over time. But that is that represents a sense of possibility, and I wonder why we are not able to intuitively adapt to our own negative traits of the environments that we create to find ways to prevent them. The ideas of Sound for New Seeds was coming out of these ideas, and you know, to what degree might we think of returning to sound again as an impetus for social connectedness, but also for change, some kind of action.
Camille Norman there, and Sounds for New Seeds reopens the Great Hall at IMA next Thursday, 24th of October. Tickets from imma.ie.